The biggest authoritarian religious right win of 2022 may be the end of Roe v. Wade. But in Florida, White House wannabe Ron DeSantis seems to have perfected the pander, with laws squelching classroom lessons on racism in America, as well as the notorious Don't Say Gay bill set to impact the state's schools this September. An urgent court challenge by a number of advocacy groups is being led by Florida Families and Lambda Legal, an effective national civil rights and advocacy group founded in 1973. And I'm very happy to welcome staff attorney Kel Olson to State of Belief Radio. Kel, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jack.
What's a quick summary of this bill, which proponents describe as a well-intentioned protection for kids, and the actual harm it would bring to the classroom?
Sure. Well, the law for ages kindergarten through third grade in Florida is a complete ban on discussion or instruction. It's a bit ambiguous, as is much of the law, on topics of sexual orientation and gender identity. And again, those are terms that are not defined in the law. And then for kids in fourth grade through 12th, there is a restriction based on the same subjects on some undefined notion of what is appropriate. So again, leaving a lot of room. And then the interesting and unique aspect of this law that we're seeing with a lot of these laws more recently is to, instead of having what we would traditionally have, which is the ability for the school district to interpret that law and then apply it, is that there's an additional layer where individual parents can sue the school under the law if they are unsatisfied with how the school district is implementing it. So as you might imagine, coupled with the motivation for the law, this invites parents to sue the school if they feel the school should be censoring LGBT content more broadly than it is. And it allows parents to carry forth the discriminatory purpose of the law in the way that they're attacking and watching over schools with not only the ability to sue, but the ability to collect costs and attorney fees. And that's only from the parent side, not from the school side, if the school wins that lawsuit.
Wow. Wow. How involved is the political religious right in promoting this and similar pieces of radical legislation?
I don't know if I can speak to how much they're directly involved in this legislation. We definitely saw references in the legislative history to the purpose of the law being to allow parents with a certain idea of a particular moral code to limit what is discussed in school and to prevent students from coming out and to prevent teachers and school administrators from offering support in the way they traditionally would have, which is to be able to continue supporting youth by providing the message that all students are respected and safe at school, that all families look different, that kind of messaging that schools traditionally have safely been able to do now is being targeted as being, you know, being a gender ideology or as promoting something just by acknowledging things in a positive way. So the concern, of course, is that even neutral statements of support that schools have traditionally been able to give will be attacked.
Wow. There are some very brave families that have stepped into the public eye to help explain why this is really a very big deal for them and for others. Can you talk about some of them?
Absolutely. So we have some wonderful plaintiffs who have stepped forth. And I should mention, we also are working with some other wonderful groups. So not just Lambda Legal representing these families, but also the Southern Legal Council, which is Florida-based, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and the law firm Baker McKenzie is doing pro bono work. So we have a great team supporting these plaintiffs who have stepped up in a very hostile environment, which, as you imagine, is rather intimidating at this point to do. So we're very thankful that they're willing to do that. And they have decided that they need to do something, even if it does put them out there a little bit. We have family, for example, that has multiple kids in the Orange County School District. And one of them is a non-binary middle school student, 12-year-old. And they have two younger kids in that K-3 range where discussion of gender identity is banned. So for a lot of us, we remember, or if we've had small kids go through school, we know that in the K through three range, they often show up to school and the first thing they're asked to do is an all about me project or a what I did over my summer vacation. And kids at that age are talking about family. They're talking about their siblings, and it's natural and reasonable to think that if they use they, them pronouns for their sibling, another classmate's going to have a question. And as K through three teachers do, they teach by discussion. They don't come in with just a script at the beginning of the day. They interact with the kids, they talk with them. And so there's a concern that teachers are being warned to not wade into this territory or not talk about gender identity. And of course that means transgender students. And so there's a concern that if these younger siblings are shut down when they talk about their older sibling, or if questions about them are even hushed up or pushed to the side, that that's going to bring a lot of shame and harm against these families, because little kids are trying to understand why they can't talk about their sibling at school, or why questions about their sibling are being hushed up when at home their parents are really trying to instill the values of being proud of their family and loving every member of their family for who they are. Similarly, we have a family who is a same-sex couple and has young kids in the K through three range. And they've had the difficult discussion heading in when their third grader wanted to talk about the pride parade they attended in London this summer. And they had to have the difficult discussion before going into school of, well, they could say nothing and they could risk the fact that their, you know, third grader, rather small child, might have that part of their story hushed or quieted, or even politely would be confused about why. So instead they had the discussion with them beforehand. You might want to leave that part out because there's this law and the teacher might not be able to let you talk about it, or might not be able to let people have questions about it. And of course, again, that's very confusing and harmful to children while their parents are trying to teach them to be proud and that it's okay, that there's nothing wrong with their family. And delivering these two messages at the same time is really difficult. There's nothing wrong with your family, but you might not be able to talk about it.
Look, school's about to start. What's the timeline you anticipate for this legal challenge?
Right. A lot of our families did head back to school just yesterday, I believe. These lawsuits do take a long time. You know, we're moving as quickly as we can to both collect information about how the school year is starting and how things are playing out, and looking at all of our options for bringing that to the court and asking the court to put the law on hold or to otherwise minimize the harm that's happening in the meantime while the law is ongoing. And that gets a bit complicated because we have to balance seeing how the law is playing out and then asking for that relief at the same time. So those are the kinds of things we're looking at as the school year gets started.
Sort of like building the plane while it's already taken off.
Right. And as we mentioned, a lot of these harms have already happened. And so we don't want to have more harm than necessary already happening before we do that. But we know a lot of things are up in the air right now as well.
Yeah. Now, there are 15 states plus the District of Columbia that have joined with you in opposing this measure. Is that unusual? And whether it is or not, what does it mean that you have that support?
There are a number of states stepping up now. There is another lawsuit that was filed challenging the law before ours, and those states have appeared in that lawsuit. And we anticipate they'll be, you know, similarly interested in all challenges. This is a newer trend that has come up lately. It means a lot to have the support. States have been taking positions on a variety of issues more recently. So I think it's a trend we'll continue to see. And it's just a statement to the court and hopefully to the larger community that there is not a uniformity of opinion on this, that there are wide, you know, swaths of the country that really support the idea of having equal access to ideas in schools, having schools that can respect all students and families. And really, I think it just broadens that message that all students should be respected and safe in school, and that none of us are too shameful to be the topic of respectful learning and conversation in schools.
So on the other side of the question I just asked you, what's up with Florida? I mean, it's not the only place where these things are happening, but it is a primary locus of this kind of battle in the culture wars in this country. What's the deal?
Yeah. Unfortunately, Florida is not as unique as it might seem. As you mentioned, there are similar laws introduced across the country. Some have passed, some will continue to be introduced in the next legislative session. So I would encourage people to not get too complacent thinking that this is just happening in Florida. This is really a coordinated national movement. And where there is some legislative room for things to get passed, we're going to see it popping up first. But as the momentum builds, it kind of shifts our idea of what is reasonable as these things pass in places. And it can really affect people's appetite for trying to impose this kind of control on the public school system. We're also seeing that it's affecting teachers wanting to stay in the profession, even more teacher shortages, which of course is very much happening in Florida as well. And some of the proponents of this kind of legislation are also at the same time really advocating for moving to funding of more private schools and seem to not be unaware of the effect of these laws on harming public schools, but actually welcoming it. And that is a disturbing aspect of this that
we're
seeing as well.
I know that Lambda Legal has set up a whistleblower campaign called We Say Gay. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Many folks who have been challenging these laws have used the tagline, We Say Gay. We also try to expand that out and say we say gay and trans, because we just want to note that this law really has been focused on trans youth in particular, and we don't want to leave that out of the conversation. But we have set up a hotline that people can call. We, of course, have a lot of folks impacted by the law, and so this is focused especially on people who are having particular impacts rather than general concerns. But there is a line that people can call for some information and resources. There are two lines we set up. One is 833-I-SAY-GAY, and one is 833-SAY-TGNC, which is transgender nonconforming. So again, to be inclusive, they both go to the same place, but we do have those lines set up.
Do us a favor and say those numbers one more time,
sure,
in case people were grabbing a pen.
Sure. So that's 833-I-SAY-GAY. Or 833-SAY-TGNC.
Great. Lambda Legal offers a state-by-state guide to the rights and restrictions facing LGBTQI plus families across the country. Tell us a little bit about that resource, please, and how listeners can follow up and support the work of Lambda Legal.
Absolutely. So the easiest way to get to all of our resources is to visit the Lambda Legal website, which is lambdalegal.org. And there are a number of ways to get resources in that way. We have a map where folks can click on their state and learn a little bit about the specific laws that do and don't apply in their state. We also have a legal help desk. And again, that's easiest to access through the website because it is channeled based on your region as to which particular number you call. There's also an online form that people can fill out and submit that way. So that's the best way to start on your path to getting some information and resources or to getting in touch with us.
And Lambda Legal has offices all over the country.
That's correct. We have headquarters in New York, but we have offices all spreading across New York to LA. We have offices in Atlanta, Dallas, Chicago. So we're scattered throughout. And in the new day and age, even more of us are scattered elsewhere. So I sit in Arizona, even though I'm affiliated with our Los Angeles office. So we try to be engaged nationwide.
Wonderful. Kel Olson serves as staff attorney at Lambda Legal's Western Regional Office. Founded in 1973, Lambda Legal is the oldest and largest national legal organization whose mission is to achieve full recognition of the civil rights of lesbians, gay men, bisexuals, and transgender people through impact litigation, education, and public policy work. In Florida, The organization is working with Florida families and a coalition of other groups to challenge the Don't Say Gay bill signed earlier this year by Governor Ron DeSantis. Kel, thanks so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.